This is reel number two of the interview with Mr. George Judd on July 25th, 1955. Mr. Judd, you were telling us about your trip to Eureka Springs, I believe.
Yeah. Mr. Knight and I were laying there in our blankets, and the wolves commenced to making an awful noise around there, and I was kind of pretty badly scared. I thought maybe the wolves are going to attack us. And I said, Mr. Knight, ain't these wolves going to attack us? Oh, he says, boy, don't you be afraid. They're just coyotes. They won't hurt you. And they make an awful noise. A coyote, when they just like a noise like a child being in awful distress. And well, then we reached Eureka Springs the next morning, and Charlie and Carl Leach owned Eureka Springs, and they were two wonderful frontier men, and they originally came from a place called Meander, right north of Youngstown. And then there's where my cowboy friend was, Harry Cook, who one time lived here in Mount Union. And he and I then planned to try and start a ranch for ourselves. And we rode the country over a good bit and located a ranch and put up monuments around stating that we had located this site as a for a cattle ranch. And then Harry Cook went down to Tucson and to see Dr. Handy, and he got very sick down there and he died down there, and I had to go to Tucson and before he died, and was with him a few days. And there where Harry Cook lays now, in the cemetery at Tucson, Arizona. Well, then I went on with my cattle ranch after his death. And my folks helped me to get some money from the East, and I had a pretty nice start of cattle when I started. And this ranch of mine was located in the foothills of the large Graham Mountains, which are back of us. And one day I was there at the ranch all alone, happened to be there all alone, and all the Indians were kept on the reservations, mind you. In those early days when I was there in Arizona, they were on reservations. The government had them on reservations about 150 miles north of us, and we didn't see any Indians down there, you see, at all, hardly. Well, one day I was there at the ranch all alone. I just stepped out of the ranch house door, and here come five or six back, very dark Indians over the hill, back of my ranch. Boy, oh boy, I set up and took notice. I had my six-shooter on, and they came down there, all of them had guns. And I thought, well, I said, maybe this is my time, I'm going. I didn't know. And but they came down to the ranch, and they seemed to be friendly. And so I tried to, they come up to the ranch house door, and I had a lot of fancy pictures in the on the walls of my ranch house there, and they would look in and they'd point and laugh at the pictures, you know, and these Indians. Well, come to find out, these Indians were scouts for the soldiers that were going down into Mexico, old Mexico, to try and bring back a bad bunch of Indians that had broken away from the reservation. And these scouts were with the soldiers, but they let these Indians come ahead of the pack train of the soldiers to hunt deer down through where there was lots of deer in where my ranch was. And they killed several deer in there, the Indians, before the pack train came up. But I'd like to tell you about this wonderful pack train that the government had. Fort Grant was about 12 miles from my place, and these soldiers had just started from Fort Grant, as I told you before, to go down in old Mexico to get Geronimo and his bad Indians to bring them back to get them on the reservation again. There was about 200 soldiers, and they had large, very large mules, no wagons or anything. They all packed on, these mules were packed with blankets and stoves and everything, and supplies for the soldiers and to go down there in old Mexico. Right below my ranch was an old Indian trail that had been used by hundreds of years and is worn down in the rocks where the Indians had trailed back and forth through that section of the country, and they were on that Indian trail. And then they did get down there in old Mexico, and they brought Geronimo back and his bad Indians. Geronimo and his Indians were sent to Florida from Bowie, Arizona, there, about 30 miles from my ranch. They sent them to Florida and kept them there till his death.
About what year was this now when you...
That would be in 1886, I would say, about 1886. Well, then I was there on my ranch. My father came out one winter to see me, and he had gone to town and for some supplies, but he didn't come back when night came, and I was so worried about him, I rode into Wilcox to see, I thought maybe he might be on his way back and had some trouble or something, but I rode into Wilcox, and he was all right, and old Mr. Fall there had a large store there. It was a regular old frontiersman, and they had were having a good talk. And he was all right. The next morning we rode back, and the ranch house had been broken into. So I said to Dad, I'd had hid our Winchester rifles under the floor. And I got one of my Winchester rifles out, and I says, Father, you stay here. I'm going to see if I can't hit these fellas' trail that broke in here. So I looked all around the ranch house and rode up above, and I struck their trail. Well, I kept following their trail and following it up, and I got up about up back, and I was, mind you, I was in Little Mountains then, and I was watching a trail and watching it, and I looked up at going up an incline, and I looked up, and boy, here was two greasers pulling on shirts that they'd stole out of my ranch. And I just pulled the Winchester out and took a shot at them right away. Boy, they opened up on me. They had two Winchesters right by their sides, and they were on the ground. I had to turn and go. I had seen I was going to get killed. Then I knew a trail where they had to try and get through. So I rode over to another ranch and got a friend of mine, and we tried to head them off, but they really got away from us. But I was shot at there seven or eight times. They fellas shot at me seven or eight times. Well, then one time my father was there, and I said, Dad, I never did this before, to go hunting deer on foot. I'd always gone horseback, and when I'd see a bunch of deer, I'd get off and try and get a shot at them. But I said to Father, I'm going back here in these little foothills and see if I can't get a deer on foot. Well, I went, that is just in the evening. Well, I walked, kept watching and walking. I got in back of the ranch, maybe a mile and a half or so. And I looked across a little ravine, and here was an Indian. Boy, I said to myself, here, we're in bad here, I said. to myself, and I started down the hill on the run. I said to myself as I was going down the hill, "You're an awful brave fella." So I turned around, I crawled up back, and this Indian had been leading a horse. And I looked across, and he laid down and was holding a horse by a rope. And I thought to myself, "Well, I guess maybe, boy, you'd better not be hanging around here with these Indians in back here." So I went back to ranch and told Dad about it, but we went to bed all right again and we slept. The Indians were there, we took a chance. And the next morning I rode over to a ranch where Mr. Hayes had a ranch about 4 miles from me. And I says, "Hey, there's Indians back here in the foothill." "No, George," he says, "they're horse thieves." He says, "There's a posse after them." He says, they passed here and lost their trail. And they trailed them up here, but they lost their trail, and they've gone over toward the river, on the Healy River. I says, "Hayes, well, maybe let's get Ike Williamson and you and I, and we'll take them in tomorrow night, I says. And so we got Ike Williamson. He had a good Winchester, and I had my Winchester and a six-shooter, and Hayes was high-heeled just the same. And we went up in the mountains back there, rode up on our horses, and we got back of where I knew where this place was, where I thought they were. And boy, oh boy, we was up at just at daylight, you mind. So we thought we'd catch them just at daylight. Mind you, it is shooting, it is nothing, no easy stuff about it, it's going to be shooting, and we knew that. Well, sir, the plagued fellows had gone. Mm. Well, sir, right over the little hill where I was on, there was four of these fellows, horse thieves, mind you, there was four of them. And they had one little mule, and they stole about 14 horses and one mule. And we found the mule tracks, but then we didn't know just where they'd gone, and to follow them, we didn't follow. But this posse that was after them struck their trail again. They killed three Mexicans, and one fella got away on the best horse.
Well, did you always have guns with you then? You have guns and holstered all the time when you were out west? Did you always have guns?
Oh, sure. I always went with a six-shooter on all the time, in town and everywhere. I had a 44 always on, a six-shooter, a good six-shooter. Big gun, you know, none of them little pop guns. None of them pop guns. Oh, I had a good Winchester. And riding a range, many a time I carried the Winchester under on a scabbard under my saddle. On my saddle, I'd carry this Winchester rifle too. Oh, them days where Indians were tough in there. They killed lots of cowboys that I know. Not lots, but quite a number of cowboys that I'd known. Yeah. And ranch folks that I'd known. Oh. Yes, one time they rode out from Wilcox, Arizona, to my ranch one morning very early. They thought we were all killed up at our ranch. As it made signal fires below my ranch on a little round top mountain across the valley to another range of mountains, and they seen them from Wilcox, so they know the Indians were out, and these bad Indians. But then we notified we were all right. They came down a canyon just to the east of me. They came down my canyon. I'd have been not here, I'm sure. But they came down the canyon east to me, and then we notified all the ranchers around that section of the country that the Indians were out that day. So I've had kind of close calls some of these times from Indians and Mexicans and smugglers. These fellows that I struck a trail, you know, are smugglers. They were smugglers, them two fellows. Probably had opium or diamonds or something they're getting through with.
Well, following your years out west, then you came back to Alliance and went back into business.
Yeah, I went back into business, bought that store, you know, and then afterwards I got that in the tailoring business downtown. I was not a tailor, you know, but I got in the tailoring business and liked it very much. I was there for years and years on that corner of Liberty and Main. Mm. I had a nice store, ordered a nice store. I kept it pretty and had our shop on the third floor.
Mm-hmm.
We did business those days. Mind, I had the business of, the ready-made wasn't very good those days, you see. And, Salem, I must have had 40 customers in Salem.
Mm-hmm. Now that was when, 1900?
Hmm?
What year did you come back to Alliance?
I came back in 18... late in 89.
Well, it's been very interesting talking to you. Is there something that we've missed along the way that you'd like to talk about now and get in?
Each year, I try to go up to in Portage County between Edinburgh and Palmyra and visit the old farm where I was born. I was just up there this year in June, and that sentiment seems to be holding me, and I always like to go up to my grandfather's farm, which is only a mile from where I was born, and there's where my mother and my uncles and aunts were born, and where I was stayed with my grandfather and grandmother through the summers of my early childhood. The old Plum Run, where the country club now is located, was one of the greatest places for we boys to have a dam and have our swimming holes. And when we sure did enjoy swimming there, those days, bathing suits were not in vogue.
That's out where the country club is now.
Yes, where the country club is now. That's Plum Run, you know. That run is Plum Run where that dam is.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Yes, that's Plum Run. You see, way back how that Plum Run received its name. Down below State Street, just about where the Lake Park now is, there were just hundreds and hundreds of wild plum trees. And those plums, when they'd get real ripe, they were pretty good. But if not very ripe, they were pretty puckery for your mouth. And we boys would often get those plums down there as we'd be fishing down along Plum Run. And but that's the way Plum Run received its name, for those big lot of plum trees there where Lake Park now stands. See, there was no dam there those days. That Plum Run ran into the Mahoning River right there. And there's no dam. I am glad that I had the privilege of living in a log house. There's not many this day that are living in this section of the country that have had that privilege. And as a boy, I always went in my bare feet in the summer, always went in the bare feet. My feet would get good and hard, and I could just seem to run over any old thing. Nowadays, the boys don't seem to go in the bare feet very much. But those days, all the boys wore boots, and they're glad to get the boots off and be in their bare feet in the summertime. Anything more you want to ask me?
Well, I know there are just any number of topics we can discuss. There are probably 100 other things we could talk about,
yes,
I'm sure.
Lots of things we could talk about, and they're gone.
Well, I suppose, are there any other things you recall about buildings in Alliance or how Main Street looked?
I'm going to say, I have done a little, I think, for Alliance. I have built, I laid out Birch Street here that I now live on, and I have built altogether about 18 houses for Alliance and homes, and have sold them. So I've done a little that way for the good of Alliance. I've always tried to keep my properties up in good shape and tried to be a real citizen of for Alliance.
So you've been a real citizen for 97 years now, haven't you?
Hmm?
97 years you've been that citizen.
97 years.
That's right.
Don't seem possible. Honestly, it don't seem possible that I'm 97 years old. I don't feel it, I don't feel it. See, it's so nice the mind keeps good, isn't it?
Yes.
It's funny that I could take and today and name all the people way back. I could name all the people on State Street out a mile each way and a mile each way on Union Avenue. I could tell you most of their names and their first names, if you want them.
How about trying that?
What do you think of that?
Go ahead, let's see.
I can do it.
Well, let's see.
Huh?
Suppose you start in and see how many we get.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll start in out there to the west. There was John Phillips, had a farm out about a mile and a half on the south side of the street. John Phillips. And Rachel Phillips, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Then next farm coming this way was William Antrim, had his farm right beyond where the Cope Furniture Store now stands, mm-hmm. up on that hill, mm-hmm. William Antrim. Well, then you came down, there was no houses then till you got down Ridgewood Avenue. Mm-hmm. Ridgewood mm-hmm. Avenue was not there then. Then just beyond to the east of Ridgewood Avenue, there was a family in there by the name of Ed Gould, and his mother lived there, widow woman. Then you came down to the Fawcetts, John Jake Fawcetts. They were prominent people in Canton. Jake Fawcett was a probate judge in Canton. His father, his mother, and Jake Fawcett and John Father. Then you came down to Miss McBride's. I've forgotten her first name. Then you came to a house by the name of Wilder. Then you came to Elmer Lilly's home. Then you came to John Johnson's home. Then you came to Ellis Johnson's home, way back in the lane up where the standpipe now stands. Ellis Johnson's home. Well, then you came down. To John Johnson's home, my wife's father's. Then you came down to Dr. Rice was a dentist in there. Old Dr. Rice had a dentist on, and William Rice.
What time?
Charlie Rice and Clarence Rice with his sons.
What year is this now?
Oh, that was long, I'm talking along about the 78 along
all
in
right.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you come on down on that street to Professor Chapman. He was one of the early teachers. Professor Chapman's on that. I.O. Chapman. And then you come down to Bill Painter. Then you came down to Mrs. Gause, Ida Gause, with her daughter. And then you came down to the Vaughns. Then you came down to Caleb Johnson's place. Then there was a vacant lot in there where the First National Bank is, Mount Union Bank, and the vacant lot there. But then that's where Samuel Garrison had his. Then you come down to Eddie Korn had on the square there where the gas station is. He had the hotel there, a very nice little hotel, Eddie Gavon. Then you came down to Henry Martin's, that brick house I'm telling you about. Then you come down to Nick Hoyle's house, an old house that stands where that vacant lot is where they have for parking, there next to that brick house. Well, then you came down to Tommy Painter's house. Then you came down to the Watson house that you've been reading about in the paper here, that old house that's all torn down. John Watson's house, and Melvina Watson, his wife's name. Then you came down to Zed Hoyle's home. He had a nice little, beautiful little home there. Then you come down to Harrison Jones's house. He's a preacher. He went away every Sunday to preach, but a wonderful man. And then you came down to the Cook farm. Norman's got in before you came there. They were there later. Then you came to Cook and the Hassler farm and the Webb farm. Then you're at Mahoning Avenue.
I see.
And then I could come up the same way up the
Mr.
street.
Crutch.
I could tell you the first name.
Well, if you can do it quickly here, we're just about out of tape, but if you could just give the last names coming back. Just very quickly, could you give the last names?
Then coming up this way, the Blacks had a coal bag on from Mahoning Avenue coming up on State Street. The Blacks had a coal bank. Then you came up to Barnaby's. Then there was an old fella in there by the name of George something. He's gone. Then you came up to Emory Walton's home. It stands in there, brick house. Then you came up to Sophie Hoyt's. Then you come up to William Hoyle's. Then you come up to the Brubeckers and Garrison's home on the corner there where that old house is there. Henry Martin's shop. Then you come up to that old house there where they have the restaurant, the Garrison's. Then you come up to the Parks. Pettit's house. Then you come up Ian Hartshorn's. Then you come up to Owen Hartshorn's house, then the Davidsons, then the judge, Hilton. Then you came to Miss Sue Williams and Fetter Clark's sister-in-law. Then you commenced to Fetter Clark's home. George W. Clark. Then you come to the McGurr's home. Then you come to way on out there, you come to Professor Theodore Armstrong's home. Then you come to Mr. Hoyles' home. Then you come to the Lily home, and that settles that side of the street.
Well, that's certainly wonderful that you've been able to do all that.
On the other side, the other way.
I'm sure you could. We're just about out of tape, so we'll have to close it with that. But that's marvelous, and it's been a wonderful experience talking to you, Mr. Judd, this morning. I know that those who listen to this tape will profit from it a great deal.
I don't know who will ever get that stuff from me. Now, who will get this, Ethel?
We'll have this to a whole number of people. Thank you very much.